he's right here, so. Oh, he talked it. He cold talked it.
Okay. Try to get him. Yeah.
Okay, Darn.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
Hello, hello, hello again. It's Kevin and Mark. I'm actually in a very super hyperactive mood today, so that's what you're getting from me.
What's brought this on?
Oh, mate, been to a place of zen over the weekend, haven't I?
Oh, yeah. How was it?
Unbelievable.
What was Unbelievable. This, golf-specific or life-specific?
No, it was more like, it was called A Course for Life with a fella called Martin Bone Meditation on Instagram. And the reason I'm saying that is because at the end of it, we had such a good buzz and a good vibe that he agreed to come on the podcast as well.
Did he?
Yeah. So he said, basically, he wouldn't come and talk golf specific, but he'll come and talk life that you can then transfer to life and use it in every situation, whether you're like, it's basically all about living in the moment and like being calm and remaining present and not letting your thoughts get ahead of you and just taking time for yourself. And it was just, go on all day about it, but it's just literally like about living in your lane and in your flow, that he calls it, and just basically doing everything that makes you happy, so then you can make the people around you happy instead of trying to make them happy. And then when it doesn't happen or doesn't work, they're unhappy. So it's a good concept on life, basically. And it's just, I've just been literally been using it so much, like waking up 5 o'clock, getting cold showers and meditating every morning and that, man. I feel unbelievable for it. Sounds like you'd feel worse, don't it? But
other than your zen then, how are we, Kev?
Good, yeah, good. I've never been better, to be honest.
Yeah.
Been to see David twice since the lockdown started. Two more than me, and I've been just working on my tan and some of the strikes I was pulling off in that studio before.
Good.
Oh, it's hard to transfer to the course, a piece of full round together, but that's what the winter's there for, isn't it? Just rain sessions and gym sessions. That's what we're going to try and do, aren't we?
Definitely. We've had it open for nearly a week now. So how's your golf been? Have you played much? Because we haven't played have we?
No, I haven't played with you, but I've played a couple of times. But phone be always a bit wet. It's a bit, my ball plugged 3 times on one hole. I spent a full, like, at least 15 minutes on the hole just looking, because I was like, that's a brand new ball, and I've nearly lost it twice. I'm not losing it. And a little flick, and it just plugged, and I was like, what?
Really
bad. Looking everywhere, I found it under a little thing, and I just thought, you just can't score the way you want to score, and, like, you're trying to, like, piece rounds together, and it's just not happening, but I'm just taking it swing by swing. How about yourself?
Tends to plug when you're there, when you're top of 7 iron, lad.
Were you there?
Yeah, it was good, you know, yeah. Went the range Wednesday, Thursday, just to get back into it, and then played Friday. Found a swing from absolutely nowhere. Played really well. We've only got 9 holes open at the moment, so shot one over for the 9 holes. Took the money. Me and DJ had a match against Dave and Coops at the club, so we took the money there, and then didn't play Saturday, and then on Sunday.
I've seen you with a couple of big boys on Sunday. A
couple of big boys, yeah. Heidi and Sean, who we had on the professional route, came up and had a game, and young Harry Begg, who's a young aspiring amateur, plays off +4, I think. So, yeah, it was good just to watch good golfers play good games. But we had a match. Me and Heidi took on Sean and Harry, and it was on as evens at the end, although it was quite controversial, because on 16, the par 5, Harry had a birdie putt to win the hole, and it went in, but because the flags are stepped in, it bounced out, and we never give him it. So, bit of a rat move.
Do you know what? It's one of them with that. Like, it's the flags in S&A are quite thin, aren't they? So you can't really. It can say it went in, but it didn't really, did it? Because
no, but this would have went in though. Like we all looked at each other, and me and Heidi just went, nah, that's it. I think he used the birdie to half it because I got a shot on that hole. So I got a par. So we needed the birdie to half the hole and we won it. So we went one up. Harry actually birdied 17. And
so they felt sorry for you. They basically felt sorry for you and said, all right, you can win that hole then.
Basically. Basically, I won 2 holes out the 9. So I'm happy.
Were they different? I've never seen any. I've seen Harry at one shot. I've never seen Sean or Mark actually at the ball. Are they different graveyard?
Do you know what it was? It was just the aggressive play I noticed more than anything. It was driver everywhere, like on the forward tees. So it's a lot short of the course. So fourth was drivable, 15 was drivable, 16 you can get up in two, and 18 was drivable. And each one of those holes, they all went for it. So.
Yeah, but it's like having the lanes up in bowling, though, isn't it? When you've got a partner and you're only playing pairs, like you can just whack it and it doesn't matter. Well, they pulled it off as well.
I took a 6-iron off all them tees.
Yeah. You little shitbag.
6-iron wedge, make me par, get out of there. Heidi drove 4, Sean drove 15, put it to about 10 foot, and Harry drove 18, put it to about 10 foot. All two putt birdies, like such an easy game when you watch them play, but not that many bad shots really, considering how rusty they probably are because they haven't played. Just it was a good game, really. I actually played well as well. I'm playing quite well at the minute.
I keep telling loads of like a few of my mates who I speak to around the talk with the podcast, like you mention all the time, and I say, come on, have a game, let's play. And they're like, oh no, you're better than me. I'm not playing with you, you're better than me. And I'm like, yeah, playing with better players brings you on.
It does,
like obviously you're there with them three. Like I'm playing with three pros in the morning, and it's going to raise my game.
100%. Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? You play with these fellas, and obviously they're used to shooting under par on a regular basis. Now can't remember when the last time I shot under par was.
Yeah, probably never.
Yeah.
Only done that because you got me last week.
But you know, it's. You can relax because there's no pressure on you to perform. You're not expected to you're not expected to hit better shots. Like me and you play with each other, we're of a similar ability, really, aren't we?
Not really, but go on.
But we are, and obviously you think you can beat me, I think I can beat you. Do you know what I mean? There's part of your game you're better than me, there's part of my game I'm better
definitely.
Than you.
No, million percent.
So it's just with them, there's no pressure really. You just go out and enjoy it. Like you say, it's better to play with better players sometimes because you're learning from them.
It brings your attention in more, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. No, it was good. It was good to get out there and have a game. I haven't played Monday, Tuesday this week because we've been in the gym, haven't we? Just working on the gym. Yeah. I know you've played as well. I just haven't found
it. I literally just seen it on after the gym on Monday and I was like, it was sun was shining. It looked like it was dog shit weather today. And I was just like, it was 2 o'clock. And I thought, I'm just going to bomb up there now and just play 4 or 5 holes. I don't care.
Yeah. But they're the four or five holes that'll get you prepped and ready for the summer, though. Those extra four or five holes that you're playing when someone like me can't be asked going out there in the night. You know what I mean? That's what it's about. But I'm in with David on Thursday. It's my first lesson for a few months now. So
nice. Just seeing on video and having putting some purpose to your practice, it just helps you. You can hit balls all you want, but you can stripe it on the range all you want, but then you walk away from a range test and you've hit 100 balls, and if someone asks you, what have you worked on, how have you developed, what are you actually doing, you've got nothing. So you need to be in there seeing them.
Well, I went in and seen them probably when I'd first getting back into it. Went and seen them, got me swing on video. I felt ashamed, looking at how bad it was. But then obviously over time, I've sort of listened to what David's told me on those couple of lessons we had, but then not really practiced enough to embed it in my golf swing. But then I've sort of found a swing somehow and I've started to hit it better. But it'd be interesting to actually, I'm striking it much better than I was a couple of months ago now. Be interesting to see whether fundamentally anything's actually changed or whether I've just found something that I'm doing wrong.
Mate, honestly, I thought I'd found something. Went to him and all I'd done was put it right back in my stance, opened my legs and started striking down on it. I thought I was hitting it well and I wasn't.
This is me fear, you see.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely rip me swing apart and I'm going to be like, oh no, this winter's going to be more difficult than I first thought.
We've actually got a little secret, haven't we, for our listeners only.
Yeah,
if you book a lesson with David, you have to walk in and go, Pokey Boy is 10. and he gives you the discount. That's the only way you can do it.
Is that what it is?
It's listeners. I've just made that up then, but I'm going to tell him that's what it is.
No, but in all seriousness, he has got a code, hasn't he?
No, he has got a code, but it wasn't working. So I was like, instead of posting it on social media, it can be a listeners only one.
Yeah. So exclusive here on the podcast, probably from next week, maybe. We'll have a code for everyone to get some for anyone who wants to go and get a lesson with Dave. Get some discounts off your lessons and off your packages. But there was another exclusive. Sean was trying out on his drive a Korean shaft called AutoFlex. Koreans have come up with this material in a shaft. It's an extra stiff shaft. But do you know when you do that test where you put the club head on the floor and you sort of get the butt of the club and you push it down to see how stiff it is? And it, yeah, sometimes it'll, if it's really stiff, it won't move. Well, this is a double X stiff shaft, and it bent like a regular, like probably worse than a regular. So I was
so
like,
what does that do? Like,
I've no idea. It's new technology that the Koreans have brought out. It's called AutoFlex, and they're being very secretive about what it's made out of and everything. It's being tested and it's getting good reviews. But Sean gave me a shot with it on 18, and I knocked it just short of the green. And bearing in mind, I hit my driver three times, and every single time knocked it off the planet. So to get that, I was like, right, I think I've sorted my shaft, and I know what driver I'm getting for next summer. Do you know how much they are? £800.
Fuck off.
For a shaft. £800. So maybe I'll go for something a bit different.
Yeah, maybe wait till that technology gets ironed out and all that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Wait, man, I don't know. So what do you don't know any of the science behind, like, the why it flexes like that, or what the
correct I don't. I do know if you search AutoFlex Korean there's a review team, like the people who review the clubs and review shafts and do the YouTube videos. There's a team of people over in America who've done a full 10-15 minute video of it. I haven't got the chance to watch it yet, but they go into it and go into detail and test it on the simulator, and I'm going to have to watch it to see exactly what it is. But it just hit, when you feel it, it feels really flexible.
And then maybe it's stiff, but it gives you a little bit of whip through the ball, gives you a bit more speed or whatever.
Well, I think that's what the aim is, obviously, for the speed, so it doesn't stop the speed and getting the tension in the shaft. No idea, but we'll find out anyway.
Yeah, we will, definitely.
I don't know whether anyone on tour is using it.
It sounds like breaking news, that, to me.
Breaking news exclusively on the Bogey Boys podcast. You hear it first. But talking about tours, we had three events, two across the European tour and one across the PGA tour, didn't we, this week?
So I had to keep up, wasn't it, on the old telly?
It was. There was plenty to watch, wasn't there? And some low scores as well.
Yeah, not half. Especially in Dubai.
Yeah, in Dubai, yeah. Andy Sullivan opened up with a ridiculous 11 under par.
I know, yeah.
He led the whole way, didn't he?
They say that, like, when things were going his way, and, like, he was just, everything was going right for him, and his mindset was right. And he actually mentioned Lee Crumbleholme in his interview afterwards, after the round. He's a man that we've been pestering on Instagram to get him to come on the podcast and do a bit of a psychology talk with us, haven't we? So
when you look at Andy Sullivan, he's led the whole way through this week, hasn't he? Shoots his lights out first round, and he's got a couple of shots lead second round, then a couple of shots lead third round, and he gets caught. I think it was on like 14, wasn't it? He was him and
Rosner, yeah.
So was sharing the lead on 14, both 24 under, and then that's when Rosner made his first bogey. So this is talking about obviously the mental side of the game. Andy Sullivan's won on tour before. Rosner's never been in this position. He was a Challenge Tour graduate. He's bogeyed 15, made his first mistake. Sullivan's parred 15. He's got a one-shot lead. Then you've got the drivable 16th.
Yeah.
Rosner goes for it, gets up and down, gets his beard, he gets back the lead, and you see what Sullivan's done on 16.
Yeah, and then he chipped up and then three-putted it.
Chipped up and three-putted it, and it's out of nowhere, though. I think it was like only 30 foot away. I know you say only 30 foot, but I mean, you don't expect to hold them all the time, but you don't expect a three-put from 30 foot, do you? Then going down 17, they both par it, and then Rosner with his one-shot lead ends up making a clutch birdie on the last to take home his first maiden victory on the European Tour. Ends up winning by two.
Some of the scoring, it's like we had Chris Anton. He's saying like some of the events suited him where you can plod it round three unders and that. But them 24 unders, or what did he? What was it?
25. He finished 23 in the second place. Yeah,
like, come on.
Well, this is it. It's a few stats from the tournament as well. So Rosner, obviously, I'd never heard of him before the tournament. I don't know about you. Didn't even know who he was, but obviously he's come off from the Challenge Tour.
I think he was the 425th winner to go from the Challenge to win on the European Tour. I think that's a stat for you. If anyone gives a fuck about that.
But he was the longest of the week, 326 yards, first in driving distance. Yeah, so got a bit.
Yeah,
got a
I've seen. What's the par five at the bunkers on the left? I think it's
18 to par five. Eight, yeah,
with the 18 on the was left. Then. Yeah. He hit one down there at Rosner, and it I don't know, it didn't get measured on the actual coverage, but it was a monster.
Yeah, right down. Like,
every single shot I've seen him hit, he was rinsing it down the middle.
So
you said he was the longest for the week.
326 average, yeah, he was the longest for the week.
Hey, that's got to be, I reckon, since we've been talking about distance, apart from Bryson in the US Open, that's the first time that I can remember that the longest driving distance has won the tournament.
Fact check.
Or are we having that one?
Bryson, when he won the US Open, he was
And then since then, I can't remember saying, see, look, distance has won that.
Yeah.
Every time it's been, see, distance doesn't mean anything. Do you know what I mean? Until now. So this is what's bringing it to my attention.
326 yards. He's got it the furthest out there. His driving accuracy is 65%. His putting average was okay, 27.5 total puts per round, averaging that. And he hit 70% of greens for the week.
Obviously, does you to shoot fucking 25 under, doesn't it?
That's what I mean. He's bombing it down there because it's not a short course, is it? So distance is definitely key around there. It's the same this week in the Tour Championship. They're playing on the same estate, aren't they? Jeremiah Estate, but it's a different course.
Different course, yeah. I seen Matt Wallace struggling off the tee a bit, wasn't he? He was obviously getting it round. He was up there. He was like 19 or 21 under after three rounds, and then
yeah, he sort of
he had a couple of big duck hooks, not duck hooks, but like penalties and dropping and off the tee, and I was thinking,
yeah,
if he's like the biggest name on the leaderboard, really. I know Sullivan's won before, but Wallace is probably the highest ranked, wasn't he?
Yeah, from a world ranking perspective, a bit
disappointing, yeah. Yeah, you would, yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, one person I was impressed with, that Lorenzo Vera, like he shot 65-65 over the weekend to come second, and obviously I don't think that makes him into next week, but some of the golf he played, like, it just did proper impress me, like.
Yeah, the talent that's out there now, even obviously you're seeing how packed that field was with talent in Dubai this week, and Rosner, somebody who's just come up from the Challenge Tour. I don't know what his season's been like, but he made a massive jump in the race to Dubai to get in there.
That's what a win does for you, doesn't it?
Yeah. So one surprise was, though, when I was looking at the statistics, Jordan Smith, he hit 90% of greens this week, but only finished 25th.
Shut up.
Yeah, 90% of greens in regulation, because only finished 25th in the tournament. I think he was like 15 or 16 under par. So it just must have been a real struggle for him on the putting greens.
Yeah, but maybe is he not holding them all? Or then that 10% when he's missing, is he not getting up and down? And that's costing him as well, you know, the double whammy.
Yeah, he could be making big scores on the ones that he's not. Do you know what I mean? He could have a couple of eights in there or something. I didn't look at his score.
90%, man.
But yeah, 90% of greens, and he's only finishing 25th, not even like a top 10 finish. So he only
missed like 7 greens all week.
Yeah,
7 greens in 4 rounds, mate.
7 greens in 4 rounds, and he's only finished 25th. So it's obvious his putting's letting him down, or he's having some big scores out there when he's having a bad hole. I say he's playing well tee to green, obviously. But he's lucky it didn't cost him his place this week, because he 59th out of 60 he was.
Fucking hell.
So can you imagine you play that well and your putter lets you down and means you don't go the following week?
It's like we talk about Tommy with the hitting the greens, they look for birdie, look for birdie, look for birdie, and you're just frustration, 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 do you know what I mean?
That's what I mean, yeah. Exactly. Hey, right.
I seen a funny one there, and it reminded me of something that we'd say, one of the commentators, I think it was on the putt after Sullivan three putted, can't remember who it was, but he went, all that was wrong there was the line and the pace. Well, he would have had that. Like, it sounded like he was being dead serious, and I was like, is he taking a piss there? I was like, he's not a take the piss commentator, do you know what I mean?
Do you know what's so funny you should say that, right? Because I come out with that statement once and got absolutely annihilated for it in America. So where I was staying in America, just about half an hour down the road, there was a floodlit golf course where we used to go and play night golf. Unbelievable. So we'd go and play quite often, to be fair, in the winter months when it was a bit colder and darker early. So I remember us being on the green, a couple of Scottish lads, me and DJ it was, and I hit this putt, and I just come out of nowhere, and I was like, all that needed there was to be on the right line and the right pace, and that would have went in. And they all looked at me and went, never. I was like, what have I just said there? And that was it. Every time someone held a putt, then he went, oh, if only that was the right pace and the right line, that would have went in that. I got absolutely tethered for about 6 months until I left. It's probably the reason I left that.
Yeah. So basically, you're just coming out and basically saying that you got bullied out of America.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll set up a campaign for you, GoFundMe or something.
The duplicate European tour event this week.
The SA Open.
The SA Open. And he's done it again to us. We can't pronounce his second name, but he's won it again.
You know what? I actually wrote this down. Ben Ziedenhout.
Why have I all of a sudden just got a South African accent?
why have you just said into him pure Zimbabwean?
Start speaking Afrikaans in a minute.
Oh, fucking hell.
Brilliant. But he was at it again, wasn't he? Christian.
At it, though.
I'll call him Christian. So Christian,
yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. And, you know, we spoke last week about his statistics, and I know I like a stat or two, but we
it's
said...
It's so good that you like stats, because I just don't like looking at them. He's hurt my brain. I love listening to you tell me them, though.
But, do you know, we said, didn't we, that 115th or 116th on the European Tour for Greens and Regulation he was.
Oh, yeah.
So, and obviously last week we looked and he was over 80%, wasn't he? So he was hitting more greens, and because he was...
And he was second
greens,
for the week, was he, last week?
He was second for the week last week.
Yeah.
But he's gone one better this week. He hit 82% of greens. So nice. he was first for greens in regulation this week. So we did mention it last week. He seems like the type of player, if he gets it on the greens because of how good the short stick is with him, he's always going to be up there or thereabouts. So
it seems to be the short stick from long distance, though, because he boxes monsters, doesn't he?
Yeah, he literally does. His control and his pace. When he misses, he only just misses. Like, I don't know whether he's got like an eye for reading greens or whatever, but it's always there or thereabouts. They're always so close.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously got an eye for reading greens. That's
another statement from me there.
Don't know if he's got an eye for reading greens, but every time he uses the puzzle, he gets it by the hole.
I'm on a fucking roll today.
You're flying with your button. You should write a book.
So, yeah,
did you see him? Like, when I watched his interview, and he said, oh, it's just so nice to win your national anthem.
To win your national anthem?
Yeah. And I mean, tournament.
Brilliant. So, yeah, all four rounds in the 60s. He won by 5 this week after winning by 4 last week. And he becomes the first player to win by 4 or more in consecutive weeks since Ian Woosnam back in the 90s.
No, good then.
Last person to win by 4 or more consecutively on the European Tour, yeah.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, unbelievable tournament again. It's so
good, yeah. Did you see that Scott Vincent? He's from Zimbabwe, the little ginger fella with a beard.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had his beard on the bag with his, like, hot pants on every day.
Unbelievable.
I was like, fucking hell, I got sus, Jim. And he had a fully double strap big tour bag on it. You know what I mean? Like, when you see them with the beards carrying, they usually have like a stand bag or something.
A little stand bag, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're getting paid, girl, you're gonna earn your wage.
Do the job, yeah.
Definitely.
She's probably talked equal rights, and he's like, go on, then, get on the bag. Another fella that I watched that here, JC Ritchie. Did you see him?
Yeah, JC Ritchie.
It looked like he just stepped straight out the boozer, didn't he? And I just seen him getting in the bunker. I thought it was a fucking fan invasion. He just like waddled over and like flicked it out the bunker. I was like, who the fuck's this guy?
I love them ones, the ones who just look like they don't give a fuck and they
turn
up.
Like the Harry Higgs or the guys.
Yeah, Harry Higgs. They just turn up, what's happening, and then just bang, shoot a 66. There you go.
Hey, in other news as well, Marcel Seems still playing golf. Seen him popping around the leaderboard. I thought he was gone.
I seen him.
Hey!
It's about as best as you're getting from me, that.
That's it. That's your lot now. Back in your box.
Back to your statistics. Talking statistics, though, we like the bombs off the tee.
We love them.
Christian Benenzinut. Again, only hitting 55% of fairways. He was 42nd in the field and 49th in distance. He averaged 314 yards, which seems like a lot, but obviously you've got to take the...
Weather, altitude and all that.
Take the altitude into account, yeah. So but leading the Bombers this week, we speak about him every week, Wilco.
Wilco Nambar.
Nambar, yeah. Do you know how far he hit it on average this week?
Go on.
362.63 yards, man.
Mate, every time I hear him, mate, I just can't get the scene of Happy Gilmore with Chubbs Peterson saying to Happy Gilmore, "All we gotta do is develop the rest of your game. Then you'll be unstoppable, son." I'm gonna post that. I'm gonna try and make a little video of that with him standing there because it's literally like exactly what he needs, isn't it?
Well, he's made it this week, hasn't he? He's 58th on the Race to Dubai rankings. What was
someone
he...
needs to give Reed a fucking good kneecap, and though, don't he, to be winning that?
Yeah, they do. To be fair. And one more mention for the SA Open this week, Dylan Fratelli. We mentioned, didn't we, after a good return of golf for him after the Masters. He finished third alone at 11 under. He's obviously seven shots off the lead in the end. But just behind Sol, second place, the Welshman, Jamie Donaldson. He was five back at 13 under.
Watch the final round highlights there. And they all I don't know who he was playing with. They were really playing with Pappas, but he was 70 yards ahead of his playing partners on that one particular hole that I watched as I was making me dinner.
Just managed to catch him. Third after his good finish at the Masters, so he's obviously playing well. One to look out for this week on the Race to Dubai, which we'll come on to review later as the European Tour comes to an end. But one more tournament to review on the PGA Tour this time is the Mayakoba Golf Classic. Another good event. A win for...
Big Victor Hovland.
Big Victor Hovland, yeah. Second win after winning the Puerto Rico Open in February this year. She's had two in 2020, obviously.
Well, I posted on the socials, did you see it? Matty Wolf, Morikawa and Hovland. Beginning of last year and the beginning of this year, the stats like top 10 wins, world rankings, and like the season that all three of them have had, it's like
it's ridiculous.
Bravo, boys, you know what I mean?
Really good. But we spoke earlier, didn't we, about obviously looking at the statistics and things. And Hovland, he had 1 3 putt, Hovland, which isn't too bad, but he had a total of 116 putts for the week, which averages 29 putts per day. And you compare that to Harris English, who led the field in putting. He only had 105 putts for the week. Just in putts alone, Harris English, who ended up finishing sixth in the end, four shots behind, but he gained 11 shots on Hovland on the green.
Well, that's only, but then one putt can be missing the green, chip up one putt, missing the green, chip up one putt, where Hovland's in the green and two putting, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose you're right, yeah. His driving average for the week, Hovland, his distance, 300 yards. He was eighth longest out there this week. He had 36 of 56 fairways, just under 65%. But it was his approach play that impressed me the most, similar to Benzenut. He only missed 11 greens all week, giving himself 61 looks, which helped him get towards 20 under, and that was enough to win by one.
Yeah, and his 12-footer on the last one, a bit of stones on him holding that.
Unbelievable.
You know what I mean? A couple of mentions here, didn't it, for that Mayor Bank. What, the Mayor Bank, what's it called? The Mayor Class? Mayakoba. Mayakoba, I've got Mayabank written down here for some reason. Grillo, that man, you know, Grillo, everything, he doesn't seem to be, he obviously plays good golf, but when he seems to get in positions, like he's like up there leading, he just seemed dead negative and dead like, just start making mistakes. So that's another thing, you've got to think it's all mental, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like Tony Finau a bit, isn't it? Tony Finau was up there. And then the same old story with him as well. It's just,
I feel like he gets a hole in one every week as well. He had another one there.
Who did?
Fina.
Oh, I missed that. Did he get a hold of one?
Yeah.
Didn't see that.
Yeah, man. Brilliant. And then and another one where Fina put it into the which what looked like the shade, and he was going to have a mare, called the rules official over, and then where did he took his drop? I don't know how long his drive is, but he took two club lengths. He was basically on the green, putting for par. I was like, fucking hell, what's going on here? Just to learn that trick.
Definitely, yeah. Let's get that trick in the bag.
And another little sick highlight from that... The one in the golf, what's it called? The Mayor Classic.
Yeah, may we go with that?
Yeah, Mayor Classic. The golf in the PGA Tour.
The Mexico Open.
The PGA Tour in Mexico. Brendan Steele had an albatross.
Yeah, seeing that one. That was
shot, wasn't it?
So good to see them.
It actually lipped in. It like lipped in and round and when it went in. Unreal.
All in all, a good shot.
All in all, you got a 200, mate. And another thing, Brandon fucking Steele face, you might start calling him. Because he literally had a two and just was like, you obviously can't see my face because this is a podcast, but literally like blank face, no expression, talked to his caddy and like mentioned something about in the back. There was no fireworks, there was no backflips, there was no dancing. Loser.
Idiot.
That's what we call him in the game. Yeah. Brandon Steelface.
One other mention before we move on to our birdie bogey bus for the week is Andy Ogletree. He made his first professional appearance on the tour, off to a flyer 6 under. He was after the first two rounds comfortably made the cut. The cut was 1 under, but rounds are 70 and 73, so he was 1 over for the weekend. Tied 46th, so he took home his first professional check. Do you know how much he won for that?
40 grand.
21k.
Does you done it
for your first event? Does you
making bit the of cut? Crimbo money.
That's it, indeed.
Exactly. I'll tell you another little. Let me tell you the disappointment from this thing and his statement that when he said, and you'll know who it is now when I say this, I only practice for the majors. Do the golf. I just turn up, and that's what you see is what you get when I turn up and play.
Brooks
Koepka.
Yeah, he missed the cut, didn't he? On the
missed
button.
The cut.
Yeah, missed it by one.
Like that attitude's good when you win a majors and you're relevant in golf talk, but when you fade off a bit and you like Padraig Harrington won like a couple of majors, didn't he? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I can't believe what I'm hearing here.
What?
I can go back 2-3 months ago. Ooh, Brooks this. Ooh, Brooks that.
I can't remember them episodes. team de Chambeau. it's just annoying, isn't it?
There's always this talk in football, isn't it? That like once footballers get that contract, they lose the passion, they lose the love for the game. It's like, because he's made it and financially he's okay and he probably has an amazing lifestyle. Hunger. Has he lost the hunger? Is he thinking...
Well, I did see him getting fed grapes off his bed, like...
What was he doing there? Pablo Escobar or what?
Okay, no. But yeah, I just think that if you are going to turn up at the majors and win them, and you can have that attitude, but I think if you're missing the cuts in every other event, it's not good, is it?
No, it's not.
You lose your fans like you'd lost me.
There you go. Once you've lost one half of the bogey boys, there's no coming back.
Yeah, you're fucked.
That's it. No, but good, three good events, really. So Andy Sullivan, just unlucky in Dubai there. Then you've got Christian Benenzenout. You go on. What's his name?
We'll call him Big Christian.
Big Christian wins the South African Open, and then Hovland takes his second event. I'm interested to see how Hovland does next year, to be fair, because he's a cracking player, isn't he?
By the way, if you didn't know he was from Norway, you would never think he was, would you?
No.
He's the most perfect speaker. He speaks better English than Koepka.
Yeah, well, he's done the 4 years in America, didn't he? College golf. He comes through the college ranks, yeah.
Yeah. It's mad to think that, like, say someone that does a podcast in, like, 20 years, like, some of these people we're talking about now as rookies could be, like, in their golf debates.
You never know. Birdie bogey bus for the week, then?
Well, back-to-back Benny. We'll call him Benny.
Chris Benny. He's up to fifth now in the race to Dubai. Top five.
Yeah.
He's got a great chance of winning it, given the form. Be amazing if he does, yeah. But no, you're right. Winning two in a row, first person to win consecutively by four or more in the European Tour since Ian Woosnam in the 90s. He's playing unbelievable golf, isn't he? If he hits greens next week, expect him to be up there.
He's all comfy though in his little South African bubble, isn't he? So we'll see how he gets on when he gets out of there.
Bit of jet lag.
Yeah.
See what's going on over in Dubai.
His man hasn't got the tea on every night, do you know what I mean?
I'm gonna take the bogey this week.
Well, because for your golf, you're gonna say.
No, my golf wasn't bogey. My golf was birdie material. Let me tell you. You be talking my golf, Dan. I was absolutely flying this weekend. Don't know how long that's gonna last, but we'll see. No, it was what I spoke about before. The new, I had in my head this vision when I hit that drive on 18 and it was just short of the green with that new shaft that was in my head. I was thinking, I'll have to get that new Cobra speed driver that's just being released, get that new shaft put in it. And then I've seen the price of the new Cobra driver and I've seen the price of this shaft and I'm thinking, I'm not paying £1,200 for one golf club to just end up whacking it into the abyss anyway. So the bogey for the week is the price of that shaft.
Yeah, I can't even call you the Minsberg because that's exactly what I'd be thinking as well.
Yeah, exactly. If there's any Korean salespeople listening to the podcast, which we know you're not, but if you are and you want to send a few shafts over for the bogey,
we haven't expanded our reach into Asia yet, have we really?
Not yet, no. We'll get there.
I like your style.
There we go.
I was going to say that I tried one of the lad shafts. I was like, boss, Dan, I'm going to go. Like, if I love this, I'm going to go on eBay and buy one. And he was like, oh, yeah. Oh, 400 or 500 quid, you know. I was like, what?
What is that? What's happened to golf over the last 5 years, to be fair?
I don't know, man. It's like everything, nothing's cheap anymore, is it?
No. £500 for a shaft. See you later.
Isn't it? Fuck that.
Bust for the week.
Gotta be the passing of Peter Alice, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Legend of the game. Very, very sad, yeah. The voice 89. Of the Open Championship. 89 years of age, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know he was given an honorary life membership of the European Tour in 2003?
Yeah, I read that. It's nice touching yeah. it.
And he was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2012. And they're going to be giving out black armbands for players and caddies this week to show the respects.
Ribbons, isn't
it? Ribbons, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ribbons.
Very sad. Very sad.
Very sad indeed. So that's the bus for the week. The voice.
How funny is this? Not funny whatsoever. But how mad's this? Like the way the first year didn't have the Open Championship and then he does.
Yeah. So you mentioned it there, the GOAT debate.
Yeah. I'm going to stop you there in your tracks. Just hold your horses. It's not called the GOAT debate this week. It's called the Phil Mickelson Fact File. Have a little listen to Kev, and then the GOAT takes the stage. There's not much of a debate. I think it was 99.1% on it on the votes.
Yeah, it was. We had one person vote for Phil Mickelson. We had 80 votes in total, so thanks for everyone who's getting involved. The numbers keep...
Yeah, we're getting more on the votes now. We're getting more active on the socials, aren't we?
79 for Tiger and 1 for Phil.
And that wasn't even me.
It wasn't you this time. Fucking the votes up, no.
I actually voted for Tiger.
It'd be hard not to. We'll explain it in a minute. I'll let you go first. You can give your facts about Phil, and then we'll get into our man Tiger. But yeah. just to conclude the previous generational GOAT discussions that we've had. So we put a post debate vote to Faldo. Faldo took it again over Norman. So he joins Jack Nicklaus, Bobby Jones, and Ben Hogan. 4 of the 5. I know we're going to talk about Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson now as a generational GOAT debate, but I think we can be pretty certain that Tiger's going to be joining next week. So next week, we'll discuss the 5 of them, and then we'll put a final vote out there for the golf GOAT.
Yeah, well, it's one of them as well. Like I said last week, or I've said one of the weeks anyway, that there's a few other players that we've missed out that we're going to include them in the GOAT debate and maybe see if they can knock anyone out. Because I want to do a nice little segment on Mo Norman,
what a guy.
What a guy, man. So, and then anyone else you want to bring in?
There's a few. Harry Varner, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Seve Ballesteros. Yeah. The list goes on. You've even got the ones now. Dustin Johnson starting to make a name for himself. Yeah, obviously, he hasn't had enough time yet, but you've got Rory's done in the game.
Yeah, we'll pick a few more players just to add a little bit of fun to it and see if we can knock anyone out on the socials. And if they do, then we'll review them, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we will. We'll put them out there, and then we'll get a final selection of players, and then we'll go from there. So right. take it away then, Kevin. You got some work to do to convince the listeners anything different. So go first before I get into the main man himself.
So for all intents and purposes, this fella sounds very, very English. Philip Alfred Mickelson.
Alfie.
He's known as Lefty.
Why is that?
Well, this is the point. Because he plays golf left-handed, but that's the only thing that he does left-handed. So, and the only reason that he does that left-handed is because when his dad used to be hitting shots, he'd stand mirroring him and copy him.
Oh, like it was
copy
a mirror.
His dad like that. So I don't know why his dad didn't just say "Yeah, son, turn around. I'll show you how to do it properly." Do you know what I mean? But I don't actually know what's going on there, but that's how he become left-handed. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. It's more of a fact file on Mickelson this than it. Than the debate, really. He's an absolute legend for doing that advert with his volleying golf balls. And have you seen it when he's hitting the ninja kicks?
The ninja kick, Zach Johnson, isn't it? When he kicks a bottle off his head.
Well, no, that's the one where he kicks that off his head. And then because I think on the back of that, he actually got an advert then. Where he's doing a dance and he's dancing and he's doing ninja kicks. Haven't you seen it, mate?
No, I've not seen it.
The funniest thing you'll ever see, man. Oh, so I think it's more of a goat to me because he's the goat for even doing that advert. I'll post it on Instagram later so you can have a look at it. Funny, man. Very funny. This is another thing that he's probably done that Tiger hasn't done. He was inducted into the National Italian-American Sports Hall of Fame in 2008 because his mum and dad are Sicilian Portuguese.
Okay.
So there you go. That's a little one up on Tiger. Thank you. Something else that he's done that Tiger hasn't done is he took two drivers to the Masters, the legend. one to it a fade and one to it a draw.
Is that not cheating, though?
Well, you can do what you want, can't you?
So it's absolutely shite. He is off the tee then.
Calm it. Another thing that he's done that Tiger's never done is a mad big backwards flop shot over the bunker and hole. Have you seen that? Have you seen that video?
I have seen that, yeah. That's unbelievable.
But yeah, no, it's just a bit of teasing with the Tiger stuff. It's won 5 majors, 3 Masters, 1 Open and 1 PGA. And he's had 27 top fives in majors. Obviously, he's had a stellar career, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
He's not won the US Open, but he's been runner-up 6 times. So
if you're not first, you're last.
Yeah, that's it. He's second all-time on the money list, the PGA Tour's money list. Don't know who's first. Like, not really care.
Think we know. We don't know who's first.
He's never won the FedEx Cup. That doesn't help anything, but it's just a stat. He's played 12 President Cups and 12 Ryder Cups. That's a record that dates back to 1994. That kept going for like 24 years.
Amazing.
So that's good, isn't it?
What's his record? Is his record on there?
It's actually on there, obviously on the internet, but it's not actually on my notes.
Okay.
He actually started golf quite late. He started playing at 18 months old.
Late bloomer.
Yeah, very late bloomer. He owns a private jet to take him between golf tournaments. Pretty good fact. Another thing that doesn't help whatsoever is he's never been world number one. I don't know why that is. Like, sure.
Have we made a mistake having Phil Mickelson in this golf debate here?
Yeah, I'm scratching my head for facts here. another thing, he was the last amateur to win a PGA Tour title, which is pretty good. Yeah. And another thing that doesn't help the GOAT debate whatsoever is his collapse in the final hole of the US Open in 2006.
Oh, I remember that.
He would have been joining Ben Hogan. He'd won 2 majors in a row. Would have been joining Ben Hogan and Tiger Woods, the only players to win 3 consecutive majors.
Yeah.
And he was joint leader going into the final round. And he ended up in a tie for second, plus 6 with one behind Jeff Ogilvy. But he bogeyed the 16th. And then, funny thing, on the 17th, he hit it into a bin because of a garbage can on here. So he hit it into a bin, like, and then got a free drop, made par on that one. And then on the 18th, he hit driver off the hole, very aggressive play, and the ball bounced off the corporate hospitality tent and settled down in like an area of the grass. And then he decides to go for the green with a second shot, and it clipped a tree. And went 50 yards in front of him, and then his next shot plugged in the greenside bunker, didn't get up and down. And then he missed out on one shot to not go on an 18-hole playoff with Ogilvy.
Yeah.
So his aggressive play actually fucked him up.
His downfall, yeah.
Yeah. And he even said, like, the only thing I can say is that I'm sorry. I just can't believe I did that. I'm such an idiot.
That must have played on his mind then, because if he knows there straight away.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's going for 3 in a row, majors, isn't he? And he's just had a bit of a balls up, hasn't he, really?
Yeah.
Well, another thing that he'd done, similar to another GOAT, Nick Faldo, he had a 4-year drought of wins, which ended in Mexico in 2018. But he left Butch Harmon and he went to a fella called Andrew Getson. I've never heard of him, from Grey Oak Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona, where he's from.
Yeah.
And he rebuilt his swing, and obviously, and then he started going to the gym, lost a lot of weight because he thought he'd have to keep up with these other guys. And now he's obviously kept up, for so to speak. But then, as you see, as soon as he got to 50, he jumped ship, didn't he? So
yeah,
due to injuries and not being able to keep up, he's obviously playing within his means.
2 for 2 so, as well.
Exactly, 2 for 2 on this. So he can be our seniors go to him, hopefully. But as I said, it's not really much to go to about, really, with Phil. I just thought I tried to stay away from loads of facts and figures about wins and different things and bring a bit more of a touch that people might, it might tug on the heartstrings a little bit and might get the votes.
Yeah, or might not.
Yeah, might not as well, yeah. Fair enough. Hey, well, he definitely doesn't get my votes anyway.
Mine neither.
There's only one man.
Don't think there's many that would. There is only one man, and we'll talk about him now.
Oh, in fact, one more fact, actually.
Let's go.
He actually wasn't unfaithful to his wife, and he stood by her side, and it's very unsimilar to Tiger Woods, who is a cheating bastard. That's what it says there in the fact file.
Well, I've got some facts here about that, which I'll come on to in a minute. Oh, the shite that was. I'll explain all. On to Eldrick Tont Woods.
Yeah.
also known as Tiger Woods, born on the 30th of December 1975, but didn't receive the name Tiger until later. One of the people whose father served in the armed forces with Tiger, he called him Tiger in honour of him, a fellow soldier, yeah. A close friend.
Sick, I've read that before, brilliant.
Yeah. There's everything I'm going to say, you probably know Tiger is...
That's not for me, though. It's for the listeners as well, do you know what I mean?
This is it. I just mean in general, everybody knows Tiger, but I'm hoping that some of the information here is new to people and it's quite interesting. So
I'd say not many people would know his name was Eldrick Tont.
Eldrick Tont, yeah. I know. Everyone knows Eldrick, but maybe not the Tont.
Yeah.
So Tiger was introduced to golf at the early age of 2.
Late start at him.
Very late. Later than Phil, anyway.
Later than Big Philly.
But by the time he was 3 years old, he took 48 shots for 9 holes at the Navy course. So the Navy course was where his father had playing rights because he was a member of the armed forces.
Oh, yeah.
Tiger used to play that course and he shot a 48. So it only took him 48 shots at the age of 3.
A three,
right, okay. So at the age of 5, he appeared in Golf Digest. He broke 80 when he was 8 years old and he won the age 9 to 10 Junior World Golf Championship in the same year because that was the youngest category available at the time.
Fucking hell, man.
So he's not even 10 yet, by the way. And he's doing all this. So.
And he's the goat already.
Can we finish there? So his father, Earl, was obviously the man who took him everywhere, learned him how to play the game. He was a single-figure handicapper himself. Tiger first beat Earl at the age of 11. And the following year, age 12, Tiger broke 70.
Jesus. Destined, wasn't he?
Just destined for greatness. So obviously Earl was very competitive, self-proclaimed by Earl himself. And he instilled the competitiveness in Tiger from an early age, so much so that Earl studied all of Jack Nicklaus's records and then set targets for his son to beat them along the way.
Yeah, did he, huh?
Yeah. So at the age of 15, Tiger was the youngest player to win the US Junior Amateur, which is now being beat by Jim Liu, who beat that in 2010. But at the age of 15, Tiger went on to win 3 in a row. So he won it age 15, 16, and 17. At 16, he competed in his first PGA Tour event, although he missed the cut. But he was named Amateur of the Year in a number of different categories that year. At the age of 17, so he'd won the US Junior Amateur, age 15, 16, and 17. That same year, as a 17-year-old, he became the youngest player to win the US Amateur. It's not the Junior Amateur, the actual Amateur. Obviously, that record's now being broken by Danny Lee. He broke that record in 2008.
Yes, I remember reading that.
But age 17, 18, and 19, he also won the US Amateur 3 times in a row.
Fucking hell. Some streak, isn't it?
So it's an unbelievable streak. He also played in the 1995 Walker Cup team, but they lost, the American team lost the GB and Ireland team, who had the likes of David Howell, Stephen Gallagher, and Podsy Harrington in the team. Tiger's record for that week was 2 for 2. And he lost his first singles match to Gary Wolstenholme. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
Remember his name?
Anything. You know, he's a state amateur his whole life, hasn't he?
Well, I looked at that because he turned professional age 48 and he's now playing on the European Seniors Tour, the Legends Tour.
I remember when we were in Myersco, he was still living with his mum.
Yeah, he was.
And he beat Tiger. I remember saying some fella lives with his mum still and he's 40 and he beat Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he beat Tiger Woods 1-up. In that game, but then Tiger got to play him again, and Tiger beat him in the second singles game, 4 and 3.
All right, so was it.
So he's not 18 yet, and he's done all that. So aged 18, Tiger went to Stanford University, who at the time were the 1994 NCAA champions. So it was not soft there, is he, picking the reigning champs?
He probably picked him, no, didn't he?
Well, yeah, they'll
pay for it or whatever.
I think there was about 60. If I remember rightly, 60 or 70 at university and colleges that tried to take him.
How many tried to take you?
Or were you 70, were you, 74.
You just rocked up at Missouri knocking on the door saying, I've come all this way, let me do a term.
I just messaged Danny because Danny was there and just said, Danny, just tell him I'm as good as you and we'll get over. So yeah, 18, he went to Stanford University. And in 1995, he won his first collegiate event that he played in. The same year, as I mentioned before, he defended his US amateur title and played in his first major championship from his 2017 US amateur victory at Augusta. And he made the cut that year. He was the only amateur that year to make the cut. The following year and his last year in college, because he only done 2 years before he turned pro, he won his third consecutive US amateur, which we spoke about there. And he also won the individual NCAA championships in his final year as an amateur and the silver medal in the 1996 Open at Royal Lytham St. Anne's. So that's his amateur career. Obviously, he's done quite a lot just in the amateur game alone. And then he decided to turn pro in 1996. So he made
That he didn't just. It's obviously so like projected the career, because he could have just. You think you're that good? You're playing all these doing these records. Like you think you'd be just turning pro, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? But obviously stuck it out a bit longer, didn't he?
Yeah, and what I got from that was he's played in the on the PGA Tour event, hasn't he? In 1994, 95, and he missed the cut. But then he's played the 1995 championship. That's his first taste of a major, and he's made the cut. He played the 1996 Masters, and then he's thought, right, that's it, I'm going to turn pro. So he turned pro, I think it was August 1996, signed a lucrative deal with Nike and Titleist, so that always helps. And then that following year, he'd won the 1997 Masters Championship, which we know by 12 shots, and then 2 months later became world number one. And he holds the record for the fastest time from turning professional to become world number one. And he still holds that
record. Was it about 3 weeks in the middle, it sounds like?
Well, he turned pro in August 96. He won the 97 Masters would have been in April, wouldn't it? And then two months later, so May, June. So yeah, he wasn't professional 12 months before he got to world number one.
Unreal.
Yeah. So he played shite in 98, but we can let him off with that because he was suffering with a condition called myopic. No idea what it is, but supposedly it affects your eyes. So he went for surgery in late 98, 99. And then in 1999, he went on to win 8 times, including the PGA Champs.
Yeah. That's just adds to his list of surgeries, really, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. But, and this is what you were talking about before, about some cheating and things, but I've heard along the grapevine that these surgeries that you get only last 10 years, right? Which means that by 2009, his eyes would have went to fuck again.
Oh, so he thought he was shagging his babe, but it was someone like loads of other people.
This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. So he had that crash, didn't he?
Oh, sorry, love. Is that not you? Is that not you, Ellen? Oh, is that you, Ellen?
So 10 years later, his eyes go to fuck. He's obviously had that crash where he's crashed into a fire hydrant because he's obviously can't see what's happening. And then spread loads of rumours about Tiger sleeping with loads of women, which are all false. And because he's struggling with injuries at the time, he's obviously thought, you know what, this is a good chance for me to take some time off and get better. What an opportunity that would be for me to come back. The greatest comeback ever.
Right.
Fact check, are we having that?
Well, I just don't know. You'd have to sort of deny his whole press conference where he said, I was wrong, I cheated, and I lied. I thought because of money and power that I could fuck who I wanted.
maybe that's indefensible then. Now, you can only try. He was up to no good, wasn't he? And that's probably the only downfall to an unbelievable career. So,
I remember saying when it first came out, like, so he should. He deserves to do whatever he wants. He's the man. no eyes, no nothing. Just it's Tiger Woods. Yeah, do what you want, mate.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, so 1999, he'd gone, as I said there, he's gone back, he's won 8 times, including the PGA Champs, and then the year 2000 comes. Tiger won 9 of 20 tournaments he entered that year, which included 3 of the 4 majors. He won 6 PGA Tour events in a row, winning the US Open by 15 shots.
That's some going, isn't it?
Unbelievable. He went on in 2001 to win the Masters, so he held all 4 majors at the same time. And although he's not given the title as the Grand Slam, it's now known as the Tiger Slam because he's got all four in the one go. And in 2000, that same year, he won all those events. He broke the record for the lowest score on average in tour history and still holds that today.
Was he? That's unbelievable, isn't it?
So after winning the Masters in 2001, he failed to defend any of the 3 majors that year, but did defend the Masters in 2002 and then went on to win the 2002 US Open by 3 shots. Do you know what that was against?
It evades me.
I bet it does. Phil Mickelson. So after that, his form slipped in majors. He didn't win any majors in 2003 and 2004. But the fact that he's being judged to say that his form slipped just because he never won majors is fucking mad in itself, isn't it?
No, absolute joke.
So you don't win majors, so your form slips. Well, he actually won five times in 2003 and just won in 2004. But it was in 2004 where he lost his world number one ranking to Vijay Singh.
No, remember they brought out fucking Vijay Singh golf on the PlayStation. It's like, leg it, mate.
Yeah, get to fuck. Where's my man? So yeah, he was back at it in 2005. He won two majors, then a further two majors in 2006, and then one each year in 2007 and 2008. And then
2008 was on one leg, wasn't it, when he was bollocks to Rocco Media against Rocco Media, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And had that unbelievable 18th hole. He got up and down and hold that monster to get the 18-hole playoff on it. But then, obviously, as I mentioned, his eyes went a bit funny and then loads of lies were circulated about him.
Yeah.
Obviously, never won another major then until last year, 2019, when we seen that absolute miracle at Augusta.
Spectacle, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. So, in his 87 major championships, he's made the cut 74 times.
Going in it.
Yeah. So, he's won 82 PGA Tour events, which includes his 15 major championships, and he's won 18 WGC events.
All right. Have you seen that video where the Mickelson and Tiger on the tee?
Yeah.
Introducing the 97, 2002, do that. And then he keeps going on, and Mickelson just goes, All right.
It is, though, but in his whole career, he's played 365 events and he's made the cut 332 times. There's only 33 events that he's not made the cut in.
No wonder he's bollocks.
And he's finished second 31 times as well. Just thought I'd get that in. But as I say, it's the GOAT debate. Obviously, we Tiger's flying through next week. So part two of Tiger will come next week. There's plenty more to say. So anybody listening who thinks you haven't mentioned this, you haven't mentioned that, don't you worry. That's all coming next week when we talk the full GOAT debate. We could do a whole show for Tiger, which would be an hour, 2 hours in itself.
Yeah, easy, man.
It is.
But that's... Obviously, Tiger wins. That's why I keep saying it. It's just more of a Phil Mickelson fact file, wasn't it, really?
A few
little bits in there.
Phil's no one's failure, is he? Do you know, he's...
No, fucking hell. Like, he's the boy, isn't he?
Absolutely smashed it himself. Yeah, what a career he's had. But no one can really come up one-on-one with Tiger Woods, apart from Jack, really, when we're doing these GOAT debates.
Only Jack can come up on... It's like when you play a pairs match, you need Jack to come up against them on the majors, you need Snead to come up against them on this, you need someone else to come up against them on the putting, you need an army to take them on, really.
You need Arnie's army.
Arnie's army, yeah.
To take them on, yeah. But back onto the golf, the European Tour then. So we've got the Tour Championship.
The big finale.
The European Tour comes to an end. Back in action for the final time at the Jumeirah Golf Estates.
The Dubai World Championships. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. There's a couple
of... Tommy back in action.
Tommy's got a great chance. There's only four players that can, if they win, don't need to rely on anybody else. And that's the top four. Patrick Reed, Tommy Fleetwood, Colin Morikawa, and Lee Westwood. They can guarantee being crowned number one European golfer should they win the tournament this week. Anyone from fifth and below will need to rely on others. So if somebody fifth or sixth wins and Reed comes second or whatever, then Reed will go on to win it. So
yeah, I've seen Westwood's won it twice as well, 2000 and 2009. And he's also won this year in the Middle East as well. So I'd say he'd be licking his chops, hadn't he?
Westwood will be right off for you. Yeah. Tommy's a previous winner as well, 2017. We all know about that one.
Yeah. But I mean, Westwood's won this year in the Middle East, in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know what I mean? It's like a good flow, good memories.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. But you know what's a crazy one? Colin Morikawa, if he wins, he'll have won and become number one European golfer without actually playing a tournament in Europe.
What? Is he?
That's
marginal because I... read that Tiger has won enough money through Opens and through European Tour events to win the European Tour money list, like the Order of Merit, but he didn't play enough events. So maybe they changed the criteria.
Because not all the European Tour events are played in Europe, are they?
I see what you mean. So he's actually played enough events, just not actually on the continent of Europe.
He's not actually played in one of the events in Europe. And obviously, Dubai is not Europe. So if he wins in Dubai... he will have become European's number one player and the first American as well, because Patrick Reed, if he wins, and that American's never won it. So can you imagine that? The first American to win it without actually playing in Europe, it's going to cause absolutely fucking mayhem.
Taking the piss, isn't
it? Literally taking the piss, yeah. But another thing which is obviously compares, and I know there's a alliance now, isn't there, between the PGA Tour and the European Tour, and they're going to be working together to get more players and more events and stuff. But when you compare and contrast the money as well, the winner this week takes home $3 million, which is nothing to sniff your nose at. But then you compare that to what you win on the FedEx. It's uncomparable, isn't it?
No, I know. Yeah. What do you get? $15 million or something?
Yeah, $15 million. So it's a fifth of what you'd win in the FedEx. So it's going to be 65 players who are competing this week. But under the pointing system, only 60 of the 65, the top 60, will be able to win, because where there's normally 2,000 points at stake in a tournament, and a small percentage of that will go to the winner. I think it's like 400, 500 points or whatever. It's 12,000 points, and the actual winner will get 2,000 points. So that's why mathematically there'll be a lot that needs to happen, but mathematically any one of the players can win.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. All the more reason to fucking kneecap Patrick Reed, then, isn't it?
So you don't want him to win, no?
No, oh, he's a fucking idiot,
don't he? Do you know what's interesting, though? Well, it's interesting. It's also annoyed me a little bit. Is of the top 60 players in the order of merit, there's a list of 10 that aren't playing. You've got.
I've seen John Rahm's not playing. He's defending champion. It's like, what?
And he's European. Doing?
I know you should have to defend your crown, really. Do you know what I mean? Unless you've got something seriously up with you.
Well, that's what I mean. Unless there's something like physically wrong, or he can't physically get there. I think it's a joke, mate. Like, he should be that. Louis Oosthuizen is in his eighth place at the moment, so he's got a great chance to win it. I mean, this could change. When does the tournament start?
Louis Oosthuizen hasn't played the last two events either, has he, in South Africa? So that's, he must be something up with him.
Maybe there's something there then. Yeah, you got Lucas Herbert, Australian. He's 10th. And he's not there. Like, obviously,
it must be the whole travel restriction nonsense, mustn't it, that everyone's dealing with?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. But there's no Paul Casey, English, he's not there. Rory McIlroy from Northern Ireland, he's not there. John Rahm, Spanish, he's not there. Shane Lowry, Irish, he's not there. So you've got all these players who are European players who, for one reason or another, are not supporting this final event. So I just don't think it's good going, me, but it is what it is, isn't it? 37th place, Adam Scott. Obviously, he's Australian. Ryan Fox, he's not playing. Tony Finau, he's 40th. He was eligible to play. He's not playing. And the Mexican, Abia Mansa, he's 50th. And he's not.
He's probably just stayed home, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's in Mexico anyway. Yeah, don't blame him.
But it's all I care about this week, really, is Mr. Consistent, leading the field in scoring average this year, isn't he? 69 points something. And he's never been outside the top three in the last three seasons. Mr. Fleetwood?
Tommy, bring
it home. And don't just bring it home in some sort of weird way. Get the tournament done.
Won and dusted. Played Portugal Masters, finished third, was it? Played the Scottish Open, lost in a playoff to Ram. So he's very comfortable, isn't he? He's won in Dubai before. So, you know, he's very comfortable in these situations. He's second, so he doesn't have to win the tournament.
That's what I mean, but like, don't even leave it, put it in your hand, take it, the bull by the horns, and just
one thing is for certain, if he wins, he brings it home, both of them, the title and the Race to Dubai winner, two-time, and still only young, so
very young,
still under 30 years of age, still with a plenty more in the bag to do, then he can start getting them majors won then.
Hey, another thing about Tommy, did you see that drill that he was doing when he was like, going cack-handed and then swapping his grip over at the top of the swing?
Yeah, I did see that.
It must be to stop him flipping the hands over.
Possibly. I have no idea. I have to ask PGA professional David Gosko.
I already have. That's how I'm coming with that information.
You're just passing that off as your own there.
I was going to. If you didn't say that, I'm just going to let that flow. But now I had to own it up.
Fucking rat move there.
Yeah, I know.
PGA professional Kevin Whitaker.
Yeah, soon.
So we've mentioned they'll be staying the same site this year as they played last week. but they're going to be playing the other course, the Jemeraai Golf Estate. It's a par 72, measures 7,675 yards. And like last week, there's some beastie holes on this one. The ninth is a par 4 that measures 499 yards. The 15th is a par 5 that measures 626 yards. And the last hole, par 5, measures 620.
I love par 5 last holes, you know, because it's...
So much can happen in it.
So much can happen. The eagles, birdies, nubbing in the water, anything that can happen.
Driver 3 woods, a difficult shot. It's a difficult shot, isn't it? Even for the pros. Do you know what I mean? It's not like hitting not like hitting driver 8, and then 3 woods can go anywhere, can't they?
Do you know what's funny that you're saying that, right? I went back, I was flicking through the earlier episodes of the podcast, and you just go, fucking hell, DJ, just hit 3 wood and hit 6 in the middle of the green and make birdie. No, hit driver, hit 3 wood, middle of the green, make birdie. It's not hard, is it? And I just go, it's actually quite fucking solid, really. Just come to me, break to me, now, like on the third episode or something.
I mean, think about it, it's fucking hard, like, isn't it?
Oh, it's fucking solid, man.
Yeah, no, brilliant. But I'm looking forward to this. The Tour Championship, the race to Dubai, man. Really looking forward to seeing
how it all... It's all sort of wrapping up, isn't it? Winding up. The GOAT debate's wrapping up. Everyone's fucking gutted about that. Like, FedEx was like a couple of weeks ago, that's sort of wrapped up, and it's like a new season now, but it's a few little mini thingios. No, Tiger Woods is not playing, and then now this is coming to an end. And also, the women's is coming to an end, because you've got the last... Major, the British Open's on this week as well, isn't it?
I fucking hope it's not the British Open, lad. You only have about 4 hours of light. Try the US Open.
I mean, the US Open, sorry. Do you know what that is? I'm actually wrote for the British Open there.
Yeah, but that's the final major for the women as well.
Yeah.
Worth a mention. That'll be on the night. There's no PGA tour event this week, so... Be an interesting one to watch. But one thing we've also got to mention is coming up is that the PNC event. Greg Norman's entered it with his son.
When's that?
That is, I think it's the week before Christmas, like the 19th or the 20th or something like that. Yeah.
All right, I see. Is it a 4 day?
I don't know.
You can't be dragging your kids around 4 days.
I think it's just an 18-hole playoff.
Oh, is it? Is it? Yeah.
Or 2 days, maybe. I can't imagine a couple of days before Christmas they'll be having a big 4 day event with kids. Probably just a one rounder. But I know John Daly will be there with his son. Not sure whether Jack Nicklaus will be there with his son.
We'll bring more facts on that.
Yeah, we'll review that next week as part as we close off the first season, and we get ready for next year.
Nice. That's it. Well, a lot to look forward to, really, coming up, to be fair.
Yeah. There is. Yeah. We've got a few more professional routes to release over the next couple of weeks. We've just released our interview with Paul Kinnear. Great kid. Yeah. Great quality golfer. Amazing amateur career. Played as an amateur on the European Tour. Played in the Open Championship as an amateur. Represented England. Played for his county. Won countless... events. Don't want to ruin the episode for you, but
no, yeah, basically decided to do the whole podcast again there.
How long have you got?
Hey, but one more thing before we go there that I've just read earlier today. It says, I'll read the headline. It says, breakaway Premier Golf League passes ahead with plan to land top players. And it's this venture capitalist group called the Rain Group it says not dissuaded by the European and PGA Tours Alliance. That they're going to bring like a league like to rival the European Tour and try and get a few of the big names, McIlroy, Stenson, who else, John Rahm, a few of the other names that they're going to try and start playing in their events. So I don't know if they're going to come with major dough for them or what they're about. But
It's good? We do need more tours, though, I think, because what we're finding with the professional, what you've just mentioned there is, You're getting lads who are not earning no money on these smaller mini tours, and they're giving it a year or two, and they're not breaking through, and they're giving up, or they're not putting as much effort and time as they should. Whereas, you know, a lot of it's very rare that you get a good amateur turns professional, plays a season or two, and they're making money. It doesn't happen.
No.
It's a 4 or 5 year thing.
I don't know that any of the ins and outs money wise anything about this tour, but I just read it then. I thought we've had one bit of breaking news with the Korean shaft, and I thought give them another bit of breaking news.
Well, there's three breaking news as well, because obviously not a lot of people knew about that Tiger Woods scandal and that it was all fake. So,
oh yeah, well there you go, three absolute hot off the presses this week.
Delivering for the people as always.
As always, we are there.
No, but yeah,
man, boss chatting to you again, brother. Love it.
Love it. Amazing. Looking forward to next year. We've got the Order of Merit at a final stage, would we call it? How would we call it?
I'd say we've just put it into makings of trying to work out formulas to get the spreadsheet to be able to calculate to whatever fucking system that you've put in place, because it's that complicated. It's going to batter heads, never mind, like our heads, never mind people. So it's on the way.
It's complicated for us, but it's very easy for the entrants and anyone who wants to participate. So just to give a slight bit of insight into where it's going is you'll get four selections each week. Each selection will come from a category of players based on the world rankings. So you can have a maximum of 150 participants in any given tournament. So we'll give the list of the tournaments that are going to be eligible. And then each week you will choose one player from each category. So rankings from 1 to 30 in the world rankings, you'll pick one player from there, and then from 30 to 60, 60 to 90, 90 to 120, for an example, from the world rankings, you'll have a bucket of players, you'll pick one player from each one, and then dependent on how they finish in the tournament will depend on how many points you get. So if you pick somebody in the lower tier who's ranked maybe 105th in the world and they go on to win, you'll get more points than, say, you picked a Dustin Johnson who went on to win.
Yeah.
And likewise, if Dustin Johnson missed the cut, you'll lose more points than you would if the person who's 150th loses more points. And then in addition to that, so the points scale will be slightly tailored to the participants that you choose. And we'll also have bonus points for the top three for different statistics. So driving accuracy, greens and regulation, and putts. There's plenty of points to play for, and the prizes are going to be bigger than ever. Say ever. We've went. There's only the second time doing it, so bigger than last time.
There's going to be a prize. Oh no, there was a prize, wasn't there? They won the entrance into the Bowling Boys Golf
Day. Joe did. So we've got some good interest in it. Bear with us. It will be ready for the new year, for when the first or second tournament starts in January. We'll have a full schedule of tournaments. We'll have a full list of rules and instructions on how to play, and anybody can enter.
Yeah. So there you go. You've heard it here first.
Watch this space. We've got it all coming. But no, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to another great week of golf. Come on, Tommy. Bring it on, mate. Be amazing if he does it. If not, then it's another great year for him. And cracking on again for next year. Good luck to Finno and Tommy on the bag as well.
Good luck, boys.
Right then. But until next week, we will catch you all soon.
Ciao.
Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.